You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
We can't assume the role of the critic immediately. We have to wait. They'll come soon enough, the critics, if we're publishing anything or getting thing out, even to our families. Sometimes our families are the hardest people to approach with anything.
Singer, songwriter, Judy Collins. Today on Now I've Heard Everything, I'm Bill Thompson. Over a seven-decade career, Judy Collins has proven to be one of America's most popular musicians. But she's not just a musician. She's the author of several best-selling books. She paints. She even directed a film documentary that was nominated for an Oscar. But here's the thing. She says you can be just as creative. In her 2005 book, Morning, Noon, and Night, Judy Collins explained her philosophy of creativity and how it can go to work for you. Now, I've interviewed her several times. I always enjoy interviewing Judy Collins. I think this interview may have been my favorite of them, though. So here now from 2005, Judy Collins.
If you're a creative person, that creativity practically bursts out of you. You can't just sit around watching TV all day. You have to do something with it.
Well, if you have a structure. And that's why I'm so in favor of kids, young people, having arts in their lives, having music, having literature, going to museums, being able to paint, to get in touch with the things that are really going to hold true for them throughout their whole lives. I address Morning, Noon, and Night to the artist in every one of us, no matter who we are, what our lifestyle is like, whether we have kids and a schedule of driving people to ball practices or skating, or whether we have time on our hands. We all have an inner dream. Whether you're an artist who's expressed that or not, you have an inner dream, and sometimes in the dark of night or in the middle of watching a great movie or listening to a great piece of music, you get back in touch with it. And it's my purpose in this book to get us back in touch with how to access those things. So I tell how I do it, morning, noon, and night.
Well, it strikes me that there are a lot of people who think creativity means you have to be a great songwriter like Judy Collins, or you have to be a great painter like de Kooning, you have to be a great sculptor, a great this. You don't have to be great to be creative, do you?
But you have to be disciplined to be great or creative. And the discipline is everything. And finding ways to be disciplined that are commensurate and companionable with your life, there are little things that help me. Cooking helps me. Cooking helps me. Being mulling over the menu, mulling over the ingredients, thinking about what I'm doing while I'm mulling over a song or a story. Then I have to have certain times in the day when I have a kind of a ceremony, I call it. I like to get up early, avoid the paper, light a candle, have my coffee. I have my coffee maker in the bathroom so I don't have to go into the kitchen first in the morning and spend those first few minutes or an hour or so, maybe 2 hours in the morning, free from other thoughts if I can do that, and writing on my new work. And then the afternoons are spent on rewriting, writing in a journal. And the evenings are spent in entertaining yourself and having the things that fill out a very, I think, abundant life.
It's kind of important also to have from time to time a day where you just don't have to work on anything in particular.
Where you do absolutely nothing. I'm a great believer in vacations. In a Sabbath of some kind that you take, on which you rest and go to movies and go out and dance if you want, walk in the park, it all contributes to the abundance of your own inner life. And the inner life is what we're trying to reach for, no matter who we are, whether we're a painter or a singer or a dancer or a chef or we make pottery or we want to make pottery. I studied pottery right here in Washington, D.C. when I was working at a club here in the early 60s. I saw a man who was throwing pottery in, I think I was working at the Shadows. He was throwing pottery, and I went in and apprenticed myself and learned to throw pots. Now, I'm not a potter today, but in those weeks where I did that, it was very, very helpful to me. I was a pianist, so I was trained to spend a certain time working on the piano, creating, but you have to create your own simple guidelines for getting to work. And everybody who writes or does anything creative has those guidelines.
You talk a great deal in the book about discipline and about because you talk in the book about when you were young and maybe, I think you phrased it, more frantic and maybe less disciplined, and you could stay up all night if you wanted
to. Oh, yes.
And you felt, oh, I stayed up all night working on this song. That maybe doesn't work so well for you anymore, I guess.
No, it doesn't work at all anymore. What works is sitting down and doing it for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then walking away from it. And also not judging. We have to be careful not to judge. We can't assume the role of the critic immediately. We have to wait. They'll come soon enough, the critics, if we're publishing anything or getting thing out, even to our families. Sometimes our families are the hardest people to approach with anything, particularly, of course, if it's memoir. Memoir writing is a whole area unto itself, and you have to, but you can't. Oh, there goes the train. You know, we're sitting here next to the train, and I love a train whistle. I don't know about you.
We could go all afternoon, and the train wouldn't come by. We start the recorder, and it comes by. So I apologize.
Well, it must identify with my nostalgia for those trains out west, the miles and miles away.
And you talk about that in the book, too, that one little a sound, a smell, one vision that you glimpse for just a moment can trigger all kinds of senses and emotions and memories that you have to pull together to be creative.
I used to have a memory, an image in my mind about a time when I was a teenager in Colorado and I was working at a lodge and going to sleep for years. If I could just get to that place where the tall pine trees were and the beautiful Grand Lake with its shimmering surface, either rain or sun, and the sound of the wind through those pines, I mean, I would be gone. I would be out. It was very comforting. Also, it's very stimulating, so that if I can think of those things while I'm awake, go into a kind of a meditative state before I approach my writing, it's a very, very healing and powerful stimulant to write from the heart, to write fresh, to write without the critic coming in and saying, no, that's not right, or this is good or better and different.
Well, you got one great line in here. You said, my opinion is none of my business.
That's right.
That is a terrific – I'm going to frame that and put it over my desk.
Yeah.
That is such a great line because we're so – many of us are so intimidated by what we think other people are going to think.
Absolutely.
Or what I think.
And our inner critics are all sitting around the table saying, yada, yada, yada. So their opinion is also none of my business.
After this short break, Judy Collins explains what part pain plays in the creative process.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 2005 conversation with Judy Collins.
You also talk in the book about it's important not to avoid the unpleasant things. I mean, you're certainly you can bring up an unpleasant memory, an unpleasant thing.
Exactly.
But you have to face those.
I think that the difficult things in my life that I've had to write about have revealed the most to me about myself, about other people, about living on the planet with a joyous and a free and a happy outlook. And it's strange that sorrow or loss should do that, but that's the underside of it, or perhaps the upper side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it's the most, absolutely the most healing. You know, if you're going through a loss, as I did when I lost my son to suicide, you're often encouraged in recovery groups to write about it. And in that writing, through that writing, two books came out that I've published in the last few years. And in the most recent one, I deal primarily with suicide, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to say, this is not about my glorious career. This is about my terrible traumas and the worst thing that's ever happened to me, and a subject that many people can identify with. And let me just take the time to sit with it, to write all about my own feelings, my own experiences, my personal view, and also to provide a lot of information for people. So it serves as not only a personal journey, but also opening up what's available to people for recovering. And that's another service that's done by what we've been through ourselves, if we can tell our stories. I believe that life is all about storytelling. Mm-hmm.
And then you have to, I think, as you put it in the book, get past the wall of tears. I mean, you as a performer.
The wall of tears,
I mean,
yes.
I've often wondered about that. I mean, some of the songs, your songs, there are other songs that I hear that bring me to tears. And I'm wondering, how can that person sing it and not just be reduced to a pile of tears themselves?
Yes.
Is it something you have to get past before you can perform it publicly?
Absolutely. And probably before you can produce it publicly in a lot of ways. In some of these songs that are on my new album, The Portrait of an American Girl, there were years where I sat at the piano and the keys were wet because I was writing about this very difficult loss of my son. Some of these songs are on the album, but I couldn't come near singing them until I'd worked my way through that. The same thing would go for a beautiful song like Can't Cry Hard Enough, which is on this album. And also something like Sending the Clowns. You know, I would be in a puddle for a long time after learning that song. So I had to get through that and get over it. Or as I often say, you think about toothpaste, and then you don't cry.
I mean, even to this day, hearing you sing Amazing Grace is just, it's all I can do to stay together.
Well, when I sing it, I don't have that problem. But if I hear it, if the bagpipes are playing it, I'm just lost.
Incredible. Does it amaze you after all these years even that what the power of a few notes of music, a few turns of phrase, a couple of words, what incredible, awesome power you possess?
Well, we all possess it. And this is one of the reasons for writing Morning, Noon, and Night, because in all of us is that connection. We hear music, we read words, we read literature. We are connected with something that is bigger than we are and that has been to the places that we've been. And that's the magic. Experience in human beings, so much of it is individual, but so the greater arc is that we all, in essence, are dealing with the same issue of living on this plane.
Judy Collins will be 85 in May. Her last album was released in 2022. Now you can get a copy of Morning, Noon, and Night by Judy Collins by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. We may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. And while you're at heardeverything.com, you can also hear my 1994 interview with another American creative genius, another very popular musician, John Denver.
I never wanted to be what people think I am or what I was told I should be. I'm trying desperately. My greatest longing in life is to be who I am.
And my 1993 conversation with another brilliant creative mind, the great poet Maya Angelou.
I have never been able to say exactly what I mean. It's like trying to describe green to a person who is colorblind, or a melody to a person who has difficulty hearing.
And of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, she burst on the scene in the early 2000s with a series of books that just became wildly popular novels. My 2004 interview with Zane.
There was some interest in publishing houses, but they wanted to tone my writing down. They wanted me to write something completely different. But I write erotica for everybody because sex is universal.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.